I did not even know what a social security number was or how important it was. But it was then I learned that I could only work on campus for 20 hours a week during the semester, because during the semester you're supposed to have 12 credits, minimum of 12 credits. You can have more, but not less. This is Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community. And we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Assorted Immigrant Stories. And if you're not following me already, please do at Assorted Immigrant Stories Pod on IG, Africans Thriving in America on Facebook, and Zenith Malao on LinkedIn. I promise to change so that all the names can match. I will do likewise. Today, I will be talking about the F1 student visa because that's what I came on. But before I get started, you can find all this information on educationusa.state.gov. You can also find this information on travel.state.gov. So there are three student visas that the United States can grant, which is F, J, and M. The M student visa is for non-academic or vocational study or training in the United States. The J visa is for participation in an exchange program, including high school and university study. And the F1 visa is an academic visa, and you will be a full-time student at an accredited college, university, conservatory, high school, pre-K, elementary, yes, K through 12, seminary, or other academic institution, or in a language training program. So for instance, this is just an example. Say someone went to medical school in Ukraine and they come here and they want to change their status. So let's say they come on a visitor visa and they've decided they want to do the exams to transition to become a resident here, resident doctor. You'd go through an institution called ATI, which is Advanced Training Institute, in order to do that, and you then get your F1 visa. Because previously, I thought it was just reserved for students who went to community college or university, but it's not. Like I mentioned, it can be high school, elementary school. But for high school, I think you can only go to a public school for a maximum of 1 year, but you can go to like the private schools and everything. You get the F1 and you can attend those schools. So before I get into the F1 student visa, I want to share a story, my story. Once I decided that I wanted to come to the United States of America, I started to ask around the typical questions. So I was asking those that had come here before and they were back home working, because I did have friends who'd come here on a full ZCCM scholarship and they were working at Konkola Copper Mines. At the time, I was working at Nchanga Mine Pool. So I'd ask them what their experiences were, and they shared their experiences with me. And I was like, I think I could do this. But see, I wasn't taking into account that they were here on full scholarships. And with my friends that were here, I was also asking what it was like. I wasn't thinking in terms of, are they students there? Are they self-pay? Do they have scholarships? For me, it was just a whole blanket, they're in America type thing. So I was just asking, like, what is it like there? Generalizing. And of course, when you ask questions that way, you get generalized answers, right? That may not even apply to you. So something to be very mindful of, that as you're thinking about coming and you're coming on a particular visa, find people who came on that particular visa as well, and then try and get what their experience was like, because you will find that there are variations with the experiences, and because the visas have different limitations, what one person may experience is not what you might experience. So that was the case for me. And I remember getting answers like, well, you can work as a maid. You could probably make somewhere between $300 and $400 a week. And when I was doing the math, oh, it was mathing. The numbers were making sense, because I thought, okay, I could make $1,200 a month. But I never asked, like, what was rent like? What were the bills like? But see, I think I had registered that I would stay on campus. That's what it was. And I just thought I could take night classes and work that money. But because I thought that once I got here, I could work, I didn't account for what could happen if I couldn't work, because I didn't think I couldn't. I have come through all my I-20s and my welcome package, and I have not found a single page where the limitations are stated, but they are on the websites that I mentioned. It is very clear on how much you can work and where you can work, but I didn't understand that at the time. I really just thought I could come here, pay off the first semester, at least most of the first semester, and just figure it out. Well, that's not what happened. Once I got here on about day 3, it was during the week of orientation, and a young man came in and he was registering for us, and we had to sit in this class, and we were told, oh, we're applying for your social security numbers because you're going to need it to work. I did not even know what a social security number was or how important it was. But it was then I learned that I could only work on campus for 20 hours a week during the semester, because during the semester, you're supposed to have 12 credits, minimum of 12 credits. You can have more, but not less. So 12 credits, and then only work 20 hours a week. During the holidays, you could work 40 hours a week. But it was in that moment I realized that I was in trouble. I realized that I was in trouble, and I just started wondering how I was going to afford it. And I started to really like go for every, I would see stands in the school. I don't want to say conference. Every now and then we would have stuff going on in school. And I remember I considered going into the military, and that this is how I stumbled upon the DV lottery, which, by the way, I hope you have applied. Then obviously I discovered there were community colleges that were much cheaper that I could transfer to, but this is like at the beginning of the semester, so I can't do that right this minute. I have to wait. But it forced me to think and plan what my next move would be, because I understood that staying at that university was not going to work. I was not going to be able to afford it at all. And mind you, my first paycheck was probably, had 9 hours, because you're competing for these jobs with everybody else. It's not specific for international students, no. So it was like $18. I was like, oh my God, what have I done? Yeah, it was very, very difficult. And that's a whole story for another day. So let's get back to the F1 visa. And by the way, you can get scholarships while you're on your F1 visa. They're just a little bit harder to get, but you can. That can help with the costs as well. All right. So So the first thing you're going to do is identify a school that has been certified by the Student Exchange Visitor Program, which is the SEVP. So you can go on the website and you can, or if you found a school, you can look it up to make sure that it's been certified. And that just means that the school is, and that just means that the school is eligible to issue you an I-20, which you would then need to go to the embassy with to get your F1 student visa. So once you've applied to a school, you've gotten your acceptance letter, they issue you an I-20, you can then now apply for your visa. But you do need supporting documents in order to get your visa, because you're trying to prove that you do have strong ties that you're going to go back to once you're finished studying. And one of the biggest things you need is proof of financial sufficiency. So this is in form of like bank statements, trust funds, and things of that nature. I use my dad's bank statement. It had my name on it and my uncle as well, because my dad had just passed away. It had to have been 6 months before then, and also the Mukuba Pension Trustee. So you can use things of that nature. So maybe you have a sponsor, your parents, your uncle, and what have you. You probably need like bank statements from that to help support the case that you can afford to pay. So I just want to make sure that you know what the limitations are. Because when you're going to the embassy, you're essentially saying, yes, I can afford to pay for this education for the next, whether it's 2 years, 4 years, or however long your program study is. They mean it. It's not a joke. Because you do not want to come here and find yourself in a position you had not imagined. It's not a good place to be in. Not at all. But once you have all this stuff together, and you obviously you'd plan for your passport, you'd fill out the form, which is the DS-160 for non-immigrant visa applications. You pay your visa fee, and I believe the visa fee currently is somewhere around $185. And with all your documents, you can then apply for your F1 student visa. And remember, the Department of State issues the visas. Homeland Security allows you into the country. So yes, you can get your visa and still be denied entry into the country when you arrive. I remember when I first came, my I-20 had some like Chinese stuff written on it. So I was kept to the side. I was held there for a while, but eventually they did let me go once they verified or clarified. I don't know where else they were checking, but that can happen. You do have, so you can get your I-20 up to 365 days before your first day of class, but you cannot come here more than 30 days before your first day of class. You will be turned around. You will go back. This happened to some people when I was in Michigan. At least I know two people who came. They came a bit early, summertime. They thought they could spend the summer, then go to school. No, they will send you back. They'll send you back. So make sure you try and come within that 30 days before school starts to avoid all those issues. And once you're in an F1 student visa status, your spouse and children can come as well, but you do have to apply for them. They need their own I-20. I think the only thing they don't have to apply for is like a service fee. They don't have to pay for that, but they'll get an I-20 and theirs will be like an F2 visa because they are your dependents. So usually the embassy will give you a visa that is valid for the length of your study. Yeah. And while you're here in the United States, your I-20 can be extended because sometimes maybe the program is a little bit longer, or maybe you just transition into another program. So your I-20 can then be extended while you're here already. And remember, when you come, I mentioned in the introduction that I-94, when you come, it will be stamped in your passport. Save it. Keep it safely. You will need it another time. Trust me, you will. And to renew your visa, you have to just follow the same procedure. You have to reapply. So most of us just avoided it because you're like, okay, I have to start this process again. Bank statements again. The money is going down. But yeah, you just have to redo the process over. So once your visa expires, you have like a 60-day grace period in which you can depart to go back to your country. Now, unless you got the OPT, which is the optional practical training. So normally this is something you'd apply for usually in the year of your graduation. I want to say in that last semester is when we applied, we were allowed to apply for the OPT. So you'd get that and you'd get a work permit. So that then allows you to join the workforce. And sometimes you might be lucky. You find an employer that sponsors you for HB1 visa, and then you transition and your status could change like that. For nurses, actually, now things have changed, and that's a whole episode on another day, because you do need to hear how I changed my career from accounting to nursing. I was studying accounting back home, but when I came to the United States a year into my business studies, I switched to nursing, and I love it. Yeah, so for nurses, you do have options now. You could get sponsored for the EB3 visa, which we'll talk about later. But now, even on the OPT, you do have agencies and hospitals that will accept your application and start your green card process right away. But it's not the case for everybody. And I think for STEM programs, you might get 3 years of OPT. I am unclear about that, but for sure, we got 1 year when we graduated. For most programs, you get a 1 year work experience permit, work permit. And when that expires, either you go back to school, get another I-20, or you have 60 days within which you have to leave the country. So employment. Like I said, for only short periods of time during the holidays, on campus, 20 hours, off campus, after a year, you can apply for hardship. And then you could be able to find work like off campus. But it's the same thing. During the semester, you're only allowed to work for 20 hours. And then during the holidays, the breaks, you can work for 40 hours. Because remember, this is not a work visa. It's a student visa, which is why they have these restrictions. But if you do find a job, for example, that requires a different type of visa other than F1, then you're eligible to change status. So that's one of the ways you can change status. So that can happen very hard, but it's possible. Yeah. You just need to work through the instructions of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is the USCIS, and your employer or another petitioner. So obviously, when you're applying for a visa, you have proof that you have strong ties to your country. But things do happen. People find love. People get married. And if that happens, your status will change. You can switch from F1 to whatever the status is. Green card lottery, again, same thing. You can be on the F1 student visa and still apply for the DV lottery as long as you're in status. Because remember, it's when you go out of status that you cannot apply for the DV lottery anymore. So those are just other situations in which you can change your status. I think there's an investor visa. I forget the name, whether it's EB3 or EB2. Don't quote me on that. But I do plan to have somebody who actually did that so that they can explain to us exactly. But if you can invest the $500,000 in the U.S. economy, that can be another route for you and you can change your status. Yeah. So these are not very easy. But I think of all these, like I said, if you have an employer, you have the H-1B visa, then the employer sponsors you. Or sometimes the employer, they'll sponsor you and then they'll let you do the legwork, right? Like find your own immigration lawyer and stuff like that. But other institutions will do everything for you. What I want you to take away from this is that the F-1 student visa does have some limitations and you just need to understand them. That way you have a better time here in the United States, or you can plan better in terms of which school to go to. You look up the cost, the city, how big is it? Because all those things will matter when you're eligible to work and you're looking for employment. So obviously, if you're in a bigger, diverse city, it's a little bit better, depending. All those things will matter. What you're studying. So it's very important to look up what you're studying, because some people have ended up getting a certification, let's say from a university, and paid so much money that they could have gotten the same thing at the community college for a fraction of the cost. So just be mindful of all those things. And when you do ask people who've come on a similar visa that you're looking for. Otherwise, you will get answers that will not match your reality. And even if they came on your visa, your realities might still be different. All right, that's all I have for you now. Next week, we will talk about the M1 visa and what qualifies under that, because a lot of people have been asking me about the M1 visa. That's all for now. And until the next episode, you do take care.